Karen Middleton is our Australia correspondent, and gosh, Karen, a lot of Australians, more than any other nationality actually, affected by the volcanic eruption on Whakaari, White Island. Good morning.
Morning, Catherine. Yes, unfortunately our news is full of your tragedy and how it has affected Australians, of course. You're right that there are the statistics are pretty bad for the Australians involved. The Prime Minister held a news conference very early yesterday morning confirming that of the then, I think there were then five confirmed dead, three of them were Australian. We've now obviously heard overnight that a sixth person has tragically been confirmed to have died. There are another eight Australians still missing and 13 Australians in New Zealand hospitals. There are reports today that there will be attempts to move some of those to Australian hospitals just to take the pressure off the New Zealand health system, which, of course, is struggling with these terrible burns that people have experienced. So the news is, well, devastating for New Zealand, but equally being shared, devastation and tragic sentiment is being shared over here. There is now also a question being asked in the media in Australia this morning about why tourists were being allowed to go there, given that seismic activity had increased. I'm sure these questions are also being asked on your side of the Tasman and probably even earlier than they are here, but certainly media outlets are now asking this question, why were tourists being allowed to go there? So I guess it moves into that investigatory phase now.
Karen, yes, and we've had extensive coverage this morning and we'll have more with a live media conference in about 35 minutes' time, but understandable given the number of affected, the response in Australia. The fires continue. What is the state? I know there was a critical day this week for Sydney where, of course, fires had been joining up. What is the current state of the weather and the battle against them?
Oh, well, it's just incredible, Catherine. I think there are still 80 fires burning across the state of New South Wales alone and various other fires in other states. The weather has been the huge problem. The temperatures have really soared this week. Yesterday here in Canberra, where I am, we had 38 degrees. In parts of Sydney, they reached 42 degrees. The city of Sydney is currently not under direct threat from fire, but there are fires to the north of that, and there are fires to the east along the New South Wales south coast. There are coastal communities down the south coast, about 2 hours' drive from Canberra here, where a lot of Canberrans have holiday homes that are all still under threat, and the fires, Rural Fire Service have done an incredible job to save some of the villages along that coast. I mean, they've been bombarding those villages with fire retardant over the last few days and really literally just saving the houses. But there's tens of thousands of acres of forest that are all gone. But the smoke in the cities is the big issue beyond where the fires are actually burning. In the city of Sydney yesterday, visibility was just about zero. I think the hazardous levels of pollution, courtesy of the smoke, were about five times normal levels, and people were really, I think, shocked. The smoke has been hanging around in Sydney for many days. It came to Canberra on Saturday. In fact, I was home on Saturday night and had the doors open because it was warm and you could smell the smoke suddenly blowing into the house, and you could see it as well. And people were, well, I was getting concerned there was a fire even closer than the ones that are a little way east of here in the town of Braidwood. So it's a pretty terrible situation and very sobering. And it's also drawing attention once again to the issue of climate change, and the political debate rages about whether or not it's the right time to talk about it. We've heard the union movement and a major business group on the radio this morning joining forces, really trying to push the government to say, actually, we really have to do more. This is getting just insane. And probably on top of all that, another tragic dimension is that we've got the Bureau of Meteorology advising our political leaders that there's not likely to be any substantial rain in Australia until April next year.
Goodness, Karen. One wonders how those firefighters actually are going to cope. And I know they have been front and centre, actually, the leadership of the firefighters, in saying we've got to confront this.
Yeah, well, they're a voluntary force too, and there are people saying maybe we should professionalise the Rural Fire Service. The government is saying no, not at the moment, that the volunteers are local people and they know the regions. But you're right, they're very stretched, and it's so early in the season, you wonder how they're going to get through the summer.
The fatigue. One of the differences between our two countries is your state legislature, which has many more powers than our regional and city councils, including introducing laws like euthanasia, which is voluntary euthanasia, which is the subject of a referendum here at a national level next year for us. Western Australia has moved and is the second state to do so.
Correct, yes. Overnight last night, the West Australian State Parliament endorsed or legalised voluntary assisted dying. Victoria did that earlier this year in June. It's a very controversial issue with a controversial history here in Australia. Back in the 1990s, the Northern Territory, right up in the north of Australia, which doesn't have the status of a state, did the same thing, but because of its non-state status, it still comes under the sort of legislative wing of the federal parliament, or federal parliament can override territory laws much more easily, and the federal parliament stepped in and did override that. So it's been a long time before we've seen legal change in Australia, and this year now these two jurisdictions and the West Australians have become the second one. Both of those are states with Labor governments at the moment, and there are a number of people still with concerns about the way these laws will operate, but there are some strict arrangements around them. For example, I think the West Australian law is going to have an 18-month implementation period, and both of those states' legislation requires that a patient has to make 3 requests, 2 verbal and 1 written, and be assessed by 2 doctors before they can be a candidate for legalised voluntary assisted dying. But yeah, it's a very fraught issue, which brings a lot of emotion to political debate. But in Western Australia, those advocates are celebrating today.
Just a few seconds left. The Holden, we know it's on its way out, but is it the last?
Commodore.
The Commodore.
Yes.
Oh, the Holden Commodore. Who's going to move the Commodore to get to the Turana?
That's right. Precisely. You got it in one. And unfortunately, Australia has only been has been reducing the number of Commodores they've been buying. They're not produced in Australia anymore. They were going to be down to only 6,000 imports. And from next year, they'll be gone. 12 months in time, they'll be gone. So no more Holden Commodore, the daggy sedan that Australians so loved. It's out and gone.
That's tragedy. I can see the castle making a new
yes.
claim, making a comeback.
It's exactly
it's the
sort of
vibe
place
you're
where
on
it's featured. Yes, the serenity, yes, correct.
Thank you, Karen. Karen Middleton is our Australian correspondent.